It's Pro Savings Days at Lowe's. Get up to 35% off select major appliances and save an additional $1,000 when you buy four select LG major appliances. Plus, get a free DeWalt 20-volt max 5-amp-hour battery when you buy a select DeWalt 20-volt max tool. Get the job done for less at Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 9/26. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See associate or Lowe's.com for more details and qualifying items. Pro Savings Days are back at Lowe's. My Lowe's Pro Rewards members save even more with limited-time doorbuster deals. Save $5 on 24-count Contractor's Choice 42-gallon trash bags, now just $14.78. Plus, get your choice select DeWalt Elite Series saw blades for $9.98. Not a Pro Rewards member? Join for free today at Lowe's. Valid through 9/17. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. See Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains September 19th through the 24th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Hey, everybody, it's Devin.
And Kate.
Welcome to Med Crimes.
Hi, God, happy Memorial Day weekend, everybody.
Thank you to all our men and women in the service.
Thank you.
And those that gave their lives.
Yes.
We remember you.
We sure do.
I actually explained to my son Memorial Day.
Oh, yeah.
So this weekend we were camping and he did say, Happy Memorial Day, which is an odd phrasing given what
no,
the
I know,
day
like
is
what
about.
It is.
But that is
but
what
yeah,
people say.
That is what people
However,
say.
However, my son was then, he was just like, Memorial Day is the best day ever. Now, he's about to finish kindergarten,
right.
So I'm like, this is an appropriate age to explain
yes,
to him.
Yes, like what it actually means.
Yes.
And how so it's not all burgers and
hot
dogs.
And he asked very good, appropriate questions. Mm-hmm. I'm like, do you know what the military is?
Yeah.
I'm like, they, you know, and they, and, you know, he's like,
such
why do they sign
bean.
Up? And, you know, just all those questions. Mm-hmm. So in his little six-year-old brain, he asked some very appropriate questions, but I started to appropriately teach him.
Yeah.
About Memorial
where
Day.
Where that comes from and where, why
I
it's
I think
important.
It's probably time that maybe next Christmas I actually tell him that the reason behind Christmas and it's
yeah.
not just all feeding the Santas.
Yeah,
so,
I mean,
you know,
feeding the Santa is a big part of it.
It is a big part of
yeah.
it. But, you know, I should tell my mm-hmm. children, I won't tell them, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I'm not
I
going
do.
There yet.
Yes.
But
mm-hmm.
they should know the meaning. But
totally.
Anyway,
yeah.
I did my duty and told him why we have a Memorial Day holiday.
Good girl. Yes. Thank you
that
all.
That was my duty.
And the armed services for your service. The armed forces. We
Kate and I were
you.
Just catching up on our weekends,
mm-hmm.
filling each other in on how things are going.
Mm-hmm. And we have an old-timey case alert.
You love the old-timeys. I love when you do old-timeys.
I
get fascinated.
It's just so interesting to me how, like, medicine came to be and, like, how people used to do things and what people thought back then. It's just so, I don't know. I have a huge appreciation for it.
And how we think it's astronomically weird.
Yes.
Yeah.
And how it wasn't really that long ago, like in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah.
You know, I say old timey. It wasn't that long ago.
So how old timey are we talking?
Like around 1900.
Okay.
Was when a lot of this takes place. So today we are going to talk about the story of Mary Mallon, who later becomes known as Typhoid Mary.
No.
Yes.
Really?
Yes. Oh. I've mentioned this before.
I've always wondered.
I've been wanting to do this for a while.
Okay.
And it just felt right in this moment.
All right.
So here we are. I am just so ready.
Let's talk about typhoid.
I am so ready for this. So Mary Mallon was an Irish-American woman who had later become known, like I said, as Typhoid Mary. And this story is actually, so it's really interesting how everything sort of came to be. And I will talk extensively about typhoid and like set the scene for everybody so everybody sort of knows like what it was like around this time. And she definitely made some fucking decisions, like some interesting decisions. But also, the situation was handled really poorly. How she was treated is incredibly sad. What happened to her is incredibly sad. Her whole story really sucks that she had to live her life the way that she did. Mm-hmm. And there were better ways to go about this.
Yeah.
But before we dive into the meat of her story, let's talk first about typhoid fever and like set the scene a little bit. So typhoid fever is also known as simply typhoid, and it's a disease caused by Salmonella typhi. The symptoms when we become infected with this bacteria can range from mild to severe. And usually it happens, you know, within anywhere from 6 to 30 days after you're exposed. And often there's like a gradual onset and you develop a high fever, and it's commonly accompanied by weakness, abdominal pain, headaches, vomiting, and diarrhea. So very much like a mostly gastrointestinal illness.
Okay.
Some people develop a skin rash. We get these like rose colored spots all over our bodies.
I don't know why I thought it was more respiratory, but
this one is not. No.
With the bacteria being the Salmonella typhoid, the gastrointestinal makes sense.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And in severe cases, people can experience confusion. And of course, the vomiting and diarrhea, if it's severe, can easily lead to dehydration, which can become life-threatening. And while this has been around for like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, I mean, if we go back and look, there are cases of diseases like presenting like this that historians believe that were caused by Salmonella typhi. So some people can actually carry it without being affected, but are still contagious. Mm-hmm. And we will get more into that later on. And typhi is believed to only infect and replicate within humans. So it's not like an animal-borne illness really at all. It doesn't affect animals at all. Typhi is spread by fecal-oral route. So it is excreted in our stool. And then those who, you know, don't wash their hands after using the bathroom.
Just gonna say, wash your hands!
And touch things. You can then easily contract it from someone else if you handle, you know, contaminated food or contaminated items. And I mentioned that somebody can be an asymptomatic human carrier. That is a thing that can happen.
As is with many diseases.
With many diseases. Mm-hmm. We'll get to that too. And that is somebody who is still excreting typhoid bacteria in their stool. It can happen in most cases, it's like up to a year after the acute stage of an infection. But it can actually be like remain present for years and years and years and years. And people can just like be colonized with this bacteria and then just continue to excrete it if it remains untreated. So a lot of it happens in areas of the world, or it happened in areas of the world where there were like kind of unsanitary conditions, where people were like maybe less educated, you know, back in the day about things like hand washing. And you know, obviously, the you know, people didn't really know about like microorganisms until like 100 plus years ago. Right. Mm-hmm. So once we started learning a little bit more about that, we started like getting into germ theory and how things are spread between one person and the other, then we started being more careful.
Right.
But a lot of that didn't get accepted by certain people for lots of years. A lot of people
Look at the divide of the Rona.
Oh, Jesus.
You know
I know,
what I mean?
Exactly.
And,
well, exactly.
You know, you still have that same exact mindset.
This
in
is
some ways.
Not new.
Yeah.
It's the everything.
That chain of infectious disease, you know, the
exactly
how to break the chain and all that is the same
and
thing.
How people absorb that information and apply that information. Mm-hmm. None of that has changed, unfortunately.
How far we've come.
How far have we come? how far we haven't come also at the same exact fucking time. Weird, right?
Yep.
So there have been lots of outbreaks, like I was saying, through history. And nowadays, obviously, it's way less common because we know more about infection control. We know more about cleanliness and we know about microorganisms. And also we have antibiotics now, which are super handy.
Yep.
But throughout history, there would be outbreaks of typhoid, which around that time, around 10% of people that were infected ended up dying from it because it would lead to dehydration, especially in the elderly and the very young. They would be particularly susceptible to having like a very prolonged severe illness or even death from it. And the treatments they would use back then were pretty limited. And of course, they didn't include antibiotics because we didn't have those until the 40s. So unfortunately, people who contracted the illness, especially if they were already sick or young or old, could die and did die from this. So the plague of Athens, which happened between 430 and 426 BC, so like thousands of years ago, was a huge plague in Athens, obviously, in which about 25% of the population of Athens died due to a GI illness. And historians actually believe that that was Salmonella typhi.
25%.
Yes.
That's huge.
Huge. It was like between 125,000 and 175,000 people died. So huge.
In one
massive,
city.
In one city.
Yeah.
So then there was the Maidstone Kent outbreak from 1897 to 1898, in which 1,900 people were recorded to have contracted typhoid fever, and then about 10% of them died as well. But this outbreak, actually, around this time, was notable because this was around the time the typhoid vaccine was developed. And we had a vaccine beginning in 1898. So we had, I mean, microbiology had actually come a long way around this time. And we knew a little bit about microorganisms. We knew that there was an organism causing this. We knew it was a bacteria. Yep. They had done a lot of investigations and sort of determined, you know, how it was passed from person to person and had been able to develop the vaccine. And we'll talk about that too a little bit more. And there were actually several occurrences around this time, like around 1900, of milk delivery men, specifically milk delivery men, spreading typhoid fever throughout communities that they served, which is weird.
Well,
because it's like,
I mean, if you think about it, like,
they are the door to door people.
Everyone used to get their milk delivered.
Everybody
you didn't
did.
Get it at the grocery store.
No. And like,
you're right. Door to door to door. They're touching the glass bottles.
Yep. They're touching
you
everything.
Know what I mean?
They're touching.
So it's like,
yep.
If there's something at the milk delivery station
that's
you know
contaminated,
what I mean? Like, yes.
Then they're just going to shed it all over the place. And it's not.
So it makes sense.
It does. It does. Yeah. And it wasn't spread through the milk itself, obviously, but it was just the handling of the distribution process, basically.
If you had someone that worked at the center, you know what I mean, that was spreading it around.
They thought that perhaps it was also the cleaning of the glass bottles, because they would recycle, they would clean and recycle their glass bottles, and that for a time that if the water that they were cleaning it with became contaminated, then that would just go to everybody. So there was that too. And actually
milkmen.
And actually in 1899 there were 24 cases of typhoid traced to a single milkman whose wife had died of typhoid fever a week before this big outbreak happened. And in 1908, J.J. Fallon, who was also a milkman, died of typhoid fever. And then following his death, the city conducted an investigation because there was an outbreak like around his community. And it was all like along his route. And they found evidence that there was like this huge outbreak that was exactly along his milk delivery route. So throughout the city, from that one milkman, there was 348 cases of typhoid.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and then once it spreads to one, it's like...
Correct. It's that bubble.
Exactly. And then, like I was saying, like it lives in your stool for up to a year after an active infection.
That's
so
crazy.
You're potentially, if you're not clean, you're spreading it and spreading it to other people. Just a little bit more on asymptomatic carriers. So there are people that are completely unaffected by the pathogen physically, like they do not present with symptoms at all, which is the same with many other illnesses, a lot of viruses, COVID, the flu.
Yeah.
We can have that and never exhibit symptoms, but still be shedding germs for a period of time. There are a lot of other diseases too. C. diff, you can be asymptomatic with and still be shedding germs. HIV, cholera, tuberculosis, the list goes on and on and on. all of them obviously have slightly different like incubations, correct, different transmission, different, you know, virulence and all of that.
Of being contagious with no symptoms is there.
Exactly. This is a thing that happens, yeah, and typhoid is no exception. So nowadays it's actually most commonly associated, having like having no symptoms, being like an asymptomatic carrier, is most commonly associated with like a very robust T cell immunity. So like in about 25% of cases of people being asymptomatic and carrying an illness like this, it's found that their T cell immune system is like very well functioning.
Good for you.
So
people,
there's like a link there. It's interesting. Yeah. And so the mechanism of disease carrying is like not well understood. The people that like don't exhibit symptoms, but people are making progress towards understanding how all these separate pathogens kind of like remain dormant in a human for a period of time. It's just interesting. All of that is very interesting. So around 1900, medicine as a whole is advancing. Again, we have some basic awareness of microorganisms, how they work, how germs are spread. Germ theory is a thing. People are aware that cleanliness, you know, makes a big difference in overall health. Florence Nightingale was doing her thing. Yeah. Changing sheets, opening windows is all of a sudden improving, yes, outcomes. And people are aware now of the impact that cleanliness plays on overall, mm-hmm, health. Anatomy has progressed quite a bit. We've had cases that occur around this time and in the late 1800s, and how anatomy is, as its own science, is a budding thing.
Yeah.
So long way to go in terms of medicine, but also has come so far in just the past 20 or 30 years when we're around 1900.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
So around this time, again, the vaccine was developed by a British bacteriologist by the name of Almroth Edward Wright. And he first developed an effective typhoid vaccine at the Army Medical School in Netley, Hampshire. And it was first introduced in 1896, and it was used successfully by the British during the Second Boer War in South Africa. Mm. And at that time, typhoid was like killing more soldiers than the war was. Soldiers were dying left and right from this. So Wright actually was able to develop this vaccine, and he had opened like this new research department at St. Mary's Hospital Medical School in London. And he further developed the vaccine there. And around 1902, the vaccine was like made available to the public because mm-hmm. it was so successful. And he actually is considered like one of the fathers of vaccine technology, because he had developed a method of measuring antibodies and antigens. this early. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
So like 1900. So he was looking at serum antigens and antibodies to diseases and like seeing how they sort of reacted to different compounds. Yeah. So this was
Still use that same science today.
Every day we do.
The same basic methods are used. We found ways to like expedite it, right?
Exactly.
With technology, but it's the same basic principles.
The same principles, exactly. So I thought that was really interesting. So now that we sort of know the scene and like what's going on, let's meet Mary Mallon. So
Miss Mary Mallon.
She was born in 1869 in Ireland, and it is thought that she actually might have been born with typhoid fever or had been born at least with the bacteria colonized within
her. From her mother?
Because her mother was infected during pregnancy, and that it was well documented. Wow. So in 1884, at the age of 15, she and some of her family emigrated from Ireland to the United States to find work. And she lived with her aunt and uncle for a time, and she worked as a maid, but eventually became a cook for affluent families. That's what she loved. She loved to cook. She was a headstrong lady. She was very opinionated. She was very set in her ways. And her passion was cooking. It was like one of the only things that she really knew how to do. She was raised to cook well, and that was like the thing she really enjoyed doing. So now, again, late 1800s, typhoid is very much around, and there were lots of little outbreaks here and there, and a lot of big ones. But with people being more careful, with medicine advancing, as well as the vaccine coming out, things were getting better. And now we're sort of at a point where we're seeing it a lot in communities that have like more unsanitary conditions, not so much in like the upper echelon, like affluent community. Uh-huh. Like we wouldn't necessarily see it like, you know, where there are a lot of like really really wealthy people. Uh-huh. And I hate to say it like that, but it's the facts.
It's just how it was.
And things were getting a little bit better in terms of like, you know, the amount of typhoid that they were seeing. So from 1900 to 1907, Mary worked as a cook in New York City for 8 different families. And she would like go family to family or sort of work at 2 at the same time. Now, 7 of those 8 families contracted typhoid fever.
Wow.
And so beginning in 1900, she worked in New York City. And within 2 weeks of her starting employment, residents in this household developed typhoid fever. In 1901, she had relocated to an area in Manhattan where members of the family she worked for.
30 years old at this point.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And again, she started cooking like in the late 1800s. And this is like starting in 1900 where they're actually able to record, like go back and look for like when she's handling food and giving food to people.
Wow.
Is when she starts passing things on. So in 1901, she relocates to Manhattan, and members of the family in that household she was working for started developing fevers and diarrhea also. And then when she moved on from that household, she went to work for a lawyer and then left after 7 of the 8 people in that household started becoming ill with the same illness.
Wow.
June 1904, she was hired by another lawyer, Henry Gilsey, and soon 4 of the 7 servants fell ill in that house. And no Gilsey family members were actually infected because they all resided separately, I guess. And then like the servants lived in the main house with like one or 2 of the residents, and the other residents had like outhouses.
Right.
And then immediately after the outbreak began, Mallon left and she relocated to Tuxedo Park, which is where she was hired by George Kessler. And 2 weeks later, a laundry worker in that household was infected and taken to St. Joseph's Regional Medical Center.
Wow.
Where her case of typhoid was the first in a long time in that location. And actually, that was the case for a lot of these. It was like, we haven't seen typhoid in this area.
Right.
In like Manhattan.
Right.
And in Tuxedo Park.
Right.
And in New York City. Like these are all
places
like
where it was
fancy,
like eradicated, quote unquote. Like not officially, but you're just not seeing it.
Yeah, exactly. These people were not like living in squalor. And you know what I mean? Like these were people that were, you know, they were living like they had. Things were very clean. They had the best of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I don't know. I mean, sometimes people just get infected too. Like, I mean, it really has nothing to do with, like, anything can happen to anybody. I'm not saying anything bad about, you know, but I'm just saying,
right.
You know, these people were not in unsanitary conditions. It's in, at least by those standards from back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
This laundry worker had been taken to St. Joseph's Regional Medical Center, where her case of typhoid was the first in a long time in that location. And an investigator named Dr. R.L. Wilson concluded that the laundry worker had caused the outbreak, but he failed to prove it. And the laundry worker died soon after. So that was somebody who actually died of typhoid. And in August of 1906, Mallon began a job in Oyster Bay, which is on Long Island, with the family of a wealthy New York banker named Charles Elliott Warren. And Mallon went along with the Warrens when they rented a house on Oyster Bay for the summer of 1906 to cook for them. And from August 27th to September 3rd, 6 of the 11 people in the family came down with typhoid fever.
Wow.
And according to 3 separate doctors, the disease...
Nobody's got any connections yet or anything.
Nope. Like they're not quite yet, but it does happen. Like,
there's no contact tracing yet.
Not quite yet. And she's moving from place to place so quickly that it's hard for people to sort of realize.
She did it on purpose.
So we'll stay tuned.
There's a reason she's a legend.
Yeah, she's a legend. The disease at the time was unusual, quote unquote, for the Oyster Bay area, because again, this is not a clean area. And the landlord, understanding that it would be difficult to rent a house with a reputation of having typhoid, hired several independent experts to find the source of the infection.
It's like, I will not stand for this.
Yep. And so they did a full investigation on the house itself.
Mm-hmm.
And they took samples from the water, from the pipes, from the faucets, from the toilets. All of which were negative for typhoid. They tested everything that they could.
So it was not coming from the house.
It was not coming from the house. Yep. Now, they had at this point developed, just so everyone's aware, a urine and stool test for the presence of salmonella for humans. So they could test people for the presence of active infection. So it was striking health officials as interesting now that all of these new cases are popping up in these areas. With typhoid being, again, more common in very unsanitary conditions, like, why are all of these affluent families and affluent neighborhoods getting outbreaks? Like, this, we're, like, it's pretty clean here. People are people are washing their hands. Like, this, there's really no reason for this. Like, what's going on? Now, a gentleman by the name of George Soper, who's an investigator who was hired by the Oyster Bay property owner after that outbreak there, had been trying to determine the cause of the typhoid outbreaks in affluent families, which was suddenly becoming this big problem out of nowhere. He discovered that a female Irish cook who fit the physical description he had been given was involved in every single one of these outbreaks.
Busted.
Initially, he had a lot of trouble finding her and locating her because she generally, like, would leave immediately when an outbreak begins without giving a forwarding address or anything. But the Park Avenue outbreak helped identify Mallon as the source of the infections. And then Soper learned of the case while it was still active and discovered that Mallon was the cook. So he was able to find her there.
Was she given a scarlet tea?
Poor thing. My God. I know. I know.
Walk, here's my walking tea.
Here's my tea. Please don't hire me. Now, Soper first met Mallon in the kitchen of the Bones Park Avenue penthouse and immediately accused her of spreading the disease. He was just, this is like,
it's all your fault.
The first, maybe don't just like go show up there and just like accost a woman who has no idea what you're talking about, potentially no idea what you're talking about. So Soper recalls that my behavior was, quote, as diplomatic as possible. But Mallon became infuriated, understandably, because she was like, what the fuck are you talking about? I don't even know who you are. What do you mean?
Mm-hmm.
And she threatened him with a carving fork. She just had it in her hand. And she was like, I will fork you.
You watch out, man.
You watch out, sir.
I have a fork.
And he demanded urine and fecal samples from her, which she refused to give. And Soper decided to go and compile a 5-year history of her employment. And he was able to find that of the 8 families that had hired Mallon as a cook, members of 7 claimed to have contracted the disease.
How did they know all of her history?
It's wild, right? Like, they investigated. They were doing, you know, the footwork, all that good stuff.
They meant business. He wanted to know. He wanted to prove.
Yep. So he tried everything to try to get Malin to like agree to give some samples and undergo some testing. And she was just like, I'm not fucking doing anything. I don't know who you are. I don't know why you're bugging me, but please leave me the fuck alone. He even tried to convince her boyfriend to convince her to give urine and blood samples. Gosh. And she still was like, no, fuck you, boyfriend. I don't want to do this. Her rationale is that I am not sick. I have never been sick. To my knowledge, I've never had typhoid fever.
Right.
I cannot physically be spreading this to anybody. There is just no way because I don't have any symptoms. And there has been zero documented cases of an asymptomatic carrier up until this point. That was not a thing that was known. So she's
like the first.
She is the first.
Wow.
So
they didn't even know that that theory existed yet.
I am not going to listen to you because I don't have symptoms. There is no way I have this disease because I do not have symptoms. So Soper went on to publish the findings of his investigation in the June 1907 issue of the Journal of American Medicine. And he stated, quote, it was found that the family changed cooks on August 4th. This was about 3 weeks before the typhoid epidemic broke out. The new cook, Malin, remained in the family only a short time and left about 3 weeks after the outbreak occurred. Malin was described as an Irish woman, about 40 years of age, tall, heavy, single. She seemed to be in perfect health, end quote, which rude, first of
all. Tall, heavy, and single.
Yeah.
Jerk. Wow.
So he just like went and published this.
Oh, man.
And
he's making it sound like she did it on purpose.
He's making it sound very.
Yeah. Like
shameful. Scathing. And like, exactly. And she's like, first of all, you haven't even tested me because I haven't even allowed you to.
Uh-huh.
This is your theory. So thanks for putting that out there for everybody to read.
And now I'm not going to get a job.
Exactly. Uh-huh. So this was pretty shitty, too.
Yeah.
This guy is like not handling this well. He's not going about this the right way, really, at all. After that, Soper also notified the New York City Health Department about her, which... it's probably not the worst thing, given the circumstances, if she's refusing to comply. The
health department is a better action to take than publicizing that article.
Maybe don't just, like, publish your findings. Yeah. Like, don't be a dick. So, by sections 1169 and 1170 of the Greater New York Charter, Malin, in response, was arrested as a public health threat.
Oh, gosh.
She was forced into an ambulance by five policemen and a physician.
Oh, wow.
And at some point, officials had to sit on her to restrain her, to get her to go into this ambulance. Mary is a feisty woman. Like, on a good day, she is fucking feisty. And this is not a good day.
Oh, wow.
She is very much not on board with any of this. She just she's wanting to live her life. It is debated because it's not really known how much she knew about what she was doing and what the impact was and how much of it was because she was not very well educated.
Mm-hmm.
And how much of it was because she was like, was it on purpose or was she just...
her mother gave birth to her when she had typhoid. Mm-hmm. That much we know. So yes. They believe that she was born with it.
Mm-hmm.
Did they not test her then?
I don't believe they did because she never had symptoms. And like now that she's working for people and handling food regularly as an adult, and they're all getting sick, then but also typhoid was a lot more common when she was younger because the vaccine wasn't around.
Correct.
People weren't washing their hands. Yep. It was fucking everywhere.
Right.
Now it's not fucking everywhere.
Right.
It's only in a few areas.
It's just popping up.
And now it's popping up where it had been previously essentially eradicated because people are getting the vaccine and they're cleaning better and mm-hmm. they're in.
And then they're not sick, so they're not spreading it from person to person.
Exactly.
So it kind of died off.
So that's a lot of the difference there, I think. So this is sad. So she was transported to the Willard Parker Hospital where she was restrained and she was forced to give samples of her body fluids.
Wow.
For 4 days, she was not allowed to get up and use the bathroom on her own. She reported and continued to report throughout her entire life that she was given almost zero information during her quarantine time at this hospital. She adamantly states that no one, not one doctor, not one nurse, explained the newly forming concept of an asymptomatic carrier to her. Nobody gave her any of her results of her tests.
Oh, wow.
Nobody, like, she was very uninformed about this whole thing, is what she swears mm-hmm. to. Now, apparently, when they tested her stool, they found massive numbers, massive amounts of typhoid bacteria that were discovered in her stool. And she adamantly declines having been sick in the past year or ever, to her knowledge, with any sort of bad GI illness with a fever that lasted longer than normal. That she adamantly declines ever being sick like that.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
During questioning, Malin admitted that she almost never washes her hands. Although this was not that unusual for this time. Again, germ theory of disease is out there. It, you know, that has been circulating, but this was not fully accepted by the general public still, like 20 years after that.
I mean, how many sweatshirts did we have around that said wash your
hands? Oh, Jesus, I know, exactly.
Just 5 years ago.
Exactly. So, especially by people who are like a little less educated and maybe, you know, from different areas of the world, you know, so it wasn't completely unusual, but she just did not subscribe to hand washing. That is just, that was not her bag. She did not like to use soap. So there's that. Now, experts believed at the time that the massive amounts of typhoid bacteria that were discovered in her stool indicated that the infection source could be in her gallbladder. And that was not unheard of, because if you have gallstones in your gallbladder, they can be a nidus of infection. That is, that they can become infected and carry and produce bacteria.
Wow.
And for her case, they believed at the time that what was happening is that she had gallstones that were colonized with typhoid bacteria, and that's why she was excreting so much of it.
No kidding.
Even if she wasn't having an active systemic infection.
Did they prove that?
So We'll get there. They did encourage her to allow them to remove her gallbladder, and she said no.
Did they just start wanting to dissect her?
Pretty much. Oh, they subjected her to a lot. So she was formally sentenced to quarantine on March 19th of 1907, which, while quarantined, she gave stool and urine samples 3 times a week for testing. Authorities, like I said, they said, I think we need to remove your gallbladder. And she refused, because, again, she said, I still have no idea what's going on. No one's explaining anything to me. And
now
you
want to take body organs from
me. I have no symptoms, and I'm not carrying a fucking disease. And she just refused to believe that she was carrying some kind of disease. She said, I don't have symptoms. I'm not carrying the disease. Again, she has long claimed that people never really communicated with her, the rationale behind what they were trying to do. I don't know if she's just saying that because she's stubborn and she didn't want to hear what they had to say. Or
that hasn't changed since 2020.
No, it has not. But she could also very well have heard exactly what she needed to hear and just didn't like what she heard and chose not to believe it.
Deny, deny, deny.
I want to keep doing the things the way I want to do them, and fuck you all. That mm-hmm. it very well could have been that kind of situation too. So we don't know for sure which side of the coin this is. So, okay, again, she's long claimed that people have not communicated with her, but again, she could just not give a shit and want to do what she wants to do. At the time, gallbladder removal surgery was dangerous. Like, it's not,
yeah, it was not
as routine like it is. Yeah. Exactly. People died from having routine surgeries back then. So she was like, I am not willing to do that. They also said, you need to stop working as a cook. And she said, no, I don't want to stop working as a cook.
Did she ever agree to anything?
She was a very disagreeable woman.
I see why everybody goes, okay, Typhoid Mary.
Okay, you Typhoid know? Mary.
Yeah.
Yes.
I see why you're slang now.
When I say she was a real spicy lady, this lady was fucking spicy as shit. So she had no real great home of her own either. Like, she depended on her employers to have a roof over her head. Like, she was a live-in cook. So when they're saying you can't cook, she's like, what the fuck else am I going to do? I will be on the street if I can't cook. I literally will be on the street. Yeah. I'm on the verge of poverty. I cannot do that. I'm going to keep cooking. So desperation plus or minus some questionable choices. God, Typhoid Mary. Now, after the publication of that initial article by Soper, this received extensive media attention.
Of course.
And it kind of destroyed her. And the media were the ones that coined her Typhoid Mary. And Soper actually went to visit Malin while she was in quarantine, which I maybe wouldn't have approached this woman after everything you did to her, but okay.
You ruined her life.
And he actually told her, I'd like to write a book about you. And I will give you some of the royalties. She angrily rejected his proposal and locked herself in the bathroom until he left.
Oh my God.
She actually ended up...
good for her.
Oh yeah, for sure. She absolutely hated the moniker that the media gave her. And she actually wrote in a letter to her lawyer, quote, I wonder how the said Dr. William H. Park would like to be insulted and put in the journal and call him Typhoid William. Okay. Yeah. Now, not all medical experts endorsed the decision to forcibly quarantine this lady.
Mm-hmm.
For example,
so were they like not able to like just treat her? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, no, because they didn't even have so they tried, and we'll get to that too. They tried with the treatments they had at the time, which were not antibiotics, and they did not work.
Okay, so just regardless, she was always living with this.
Yes, exactly. So, Dr. Milton J. Rosenau and Dr. Charles V. Chapin both argued that she just had to be taught to carefully treat her condition and ensure that she would not transmit the typhoid to others. And they said, you should not need to quarantine this lady. She probably shouldn't handle food.
Right.
If you teach her that she needs to wash her hands or she's going to hurt people, in simple terms,
maybe she could be maybe a living cleaner.
Exactly. She can do something that has nothing to do with food and people will be fine. And this is unnecessary. It's overly strict. And they lobbied for her, but the state of New York didn't hear it. Mostly, I think a lot of it was because she was being very difficult.
I was
going to
say she wasn't. But she's also like resisting.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
So I kind of don't blame her. This is all really shitty what happened to her.
Yeah, 1,000%.
This could have been handled a million different, much better fucking ways. And poor Mary suffered from what is felt to be like a nervous breakdown, essentially, after arrest and forcible transport to the hospital. And in 1909, she actually tried to sue the New York Health Department, but her complaint was denied and essentially the whole thing was like thrown out. And in a letter to her lawyer, she complained that she was being treated like a guinea pig. She was obliged to give samples for analysis 3 times a week. but for 6 months was not allowed to visit an eye doctor, even though her eyelid was paralyzed because she had like Bell's palsy or something.
Oh gosh, wow.
And she had to put a bandage on it at night. Like she wasn't able to get like other routine medical treatment. Care,
but yet she had to keep giving samples three times a week.
Yeah, exactly.
To them.
Like, oh, you guys are paying all this attention to this, but if I need something else.
What were the samples giving them? Like at that point.
They were getting mostly positive results, like consistently positive.
Right. So why keep asking for them? You know what I mean? Like
mostly because they had never encountered an asymptomatic carrier. And it was known at the time that you could excrete it in your stool, at least for a period of time after an active infection.
But never forever.
But not forever. This was brand fucking spanking new. And they are trying to treat her with some therapies that they thought would treat it and were hoping to get some negative results, but just never did because they weren't treating her with the right thing because they didn't have the right thing yet.
Did they find anybody else that was asymptomatic?
Oh, they have over the years. Yeah. Yes. But she was the first. Huh. Yeah. It's wild.
Nobody wants to be that first.
Exactly. Her medical treatment was hectic.
Yeah.
She was given something called urotropin, and she was given this in like big 3 month courses. And this is actually dangerous to your kidneys to get urotropin for like a long period of time. But that was what they thought was the treatment back then. They then changed it to a combination of brewer's yeast and urotropin in increased doses. And she was first told that she had typhoid in her intestinal tract and then her bowel muscles and then her gallbladder. So she was getting very mixed information and yeah. Because they didn't really know. I don't think they really knew exactly uh-huh. what was going on. So Malin continued to claim that she did not believe she was a carrier. And actually, with the help of a friend, she sent several of her own samples to an independent lab in New York State somewhere. And it was said that all of those tests came back negative for typhoid.
Oh.
So that is a very interesting little tidbit. And I'm not sure that that's really been substantiated.
I was
going
to say, were they able to prove that?
I don't think so. Because the only things that are on record are everything that happened during her quarantine, where they got a lot of positives, very few negatives, but mostly positives. But
because I could also see on the other side with her quarantine, like this community is also looking for someone to blame.
Exactly.
A scapegoat. So like,
that's
if you're
exactly
able to
what
substantiate it, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Like,
she was absolutely a pariah mm-hmm. and she was absolutely blamed for yeah, all of right. this. So she spent a total of 2 years and 11 months in quarantine the first time. This was her first quarantine.
Oh, Jesus.
Yes. Now, the state commissioner of health, Eugene H. Porter, after 2 years and 11 months, almost 3 years, decided that disease carriers should no longer be quarantined and that Malin could be freed if she agreed to stop working as a cook and take reasonable efforts to stop trying to transmit typhoid to others. And on February 19th of 1910, Malin said she was prepared to change her occupation and that she would give assurance that she, like upon her release, that she would take hygienic, you know, precautions okay. and wash her hands yeah. and she would change her practices, basically.
I mean, it's like someone
not handle food anymore.
Living with HIV.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? There's absolutely no reason you have to be quarantined, but
no.
you have to take precautions.
But there are things
yes.
that you have to be aware of.
Yes.
Exactly. So she was, you know, released from quarantine and returned to the mainland after that. Now, upon her release, she was able to get a job as a laundry worker, which paid less than cooking.
Okay, all right, yeah.
Okay, so she cooking made her a lot of money. She made about $50 a month cooking, which back then was
yeah, sure.
enough to live on.
Yeah.
But laundry work made her like less than half of that. So okay. she was like not really that satisfied with that.
Yeah.
So after a time, she ended up wounding her arm and then the wound became infected, meaning that she could no longer work at all for like 6 months. And that kind of put her in like a near poverty situation or like a poverty situation. She was essentially out on the streets during this time. So after a few unsuccessful years trying to get back on her feet, just doing laundry work, she starts cooking again. She used fake names. She changed her name to
gosh.
Brown. Mary Breshoff was another one.
So this is where it's getting a
yes.
little hairy.
And she accepted jobs as a cook against the explicit instructions of health authorities. And no agencies that hired servants for affluent families would offer her employment. Like, unless she used her fake name, obviously,
right,
she would never be
yeah,
able to get a job
correct.
Doing this.
Yes.
So for the next 5 years, she worked in a number of families' homes. She also got jobs in kitchen restaurant, like restaurant kitchens, hotels, spa facilities, handling food and cooking.
Oh boy.
Almost every single place she worked, there were outbreaks of typhoid because she wasn't even fucking washing her hands. Because she just not did not subscribe that. To that. She changed jobs.
I mean, people, it works. I'm just saying.
I promise you it works. Wash your fucking hands. She changed jobs very frequently. As soon as it seemed like people around her were getting sick, she would scoot to the next job.
I'm out of here.
Yep. And Soper.
Now she's doing what she shouldn't be doing.
Exactly. Now,
I did
these
not
are those,
fault her before.
These are questionable choices, I'm telling you.
Mary.
So, Soper, that investigator, was like trying to follow her and trying to like kind of keep a close eye on her, but he kind of lost her once she started changing her name and changing locations really quickly. Mm-hmm. So he was not able to track her that quickly. And when it's out in the community, like with restaurants, it's harder to kind of pinpoint those, well, that shouldn't be happening type right. of infections. It's yeah. a lot more general public.
Yes.
So in 1915, Mallon starts working for Sloan Hospital for Women in New York City. And soon 25 people were infected and two of them died. The chief obstetrician there, Edward Cragen, called Soper and asked him to help in the investigation because he had been such a big part of the other investigations. Yeah. So Soper was like, looked at a picture. He like showed a picture of like all, and he was able to pick her out of like a lineup of all the staff in the kitchen, was like, that's fucking Mary Mallon.
So they showed. So wait a minute. He had a picture of Mary and said, does this person work here?
So he was like, come investigate. And he was going through all the employee files and he fucking found a picture.
Oh,
and he was like,
that's
fucking Mary Mallon, that bitch.
Oh, man.
Oh, God. So he identified her. And Mallon fled again. Like shortly after she was identified, she fucking took off.
Maybe that's why we have lineups now.
Yeah, I know. The police were not able to find, sorry, Mallon fled. She fled, but the police were able to find her and arrest her when she took food to a friend on Long Island.
Oh, God.
Stop bringing people food! This is your friend, bitch! Ugh. So she was arrested. She was returned to quarantine on North Brother Island on March 27th of 1915. Now, little is known about her life during the second quarantine. She remained on North Brother Island for more than 23 years.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And authorities gave her a private one-story cottage. As of 1918, she was allowed to take some day trips to the mainland, but she had to return to her place at night. She was watched very carefully. She was not able to work or come in contact with food at all. In 1925, the physician Alexandra Plavska came to the island for an internship. And she organized a laboratory on the second floor of the chapel and offered Mallon a job as a technician there. So Mallon was able to start washing bottles. She did some recordings. She prepared some glasses for pathology. And so she was doing work other than food. She was starting to, mm-hmm. you know, do something meaningful with her life.
And in a controlled setting.
Exactly.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
And after Mallon was sent to her initial quarantine, the newspapers changed their opinion on the case. So the public started to sort of look upon her with more pity and
right.
less.
This poor woman can't live in the public.
Exactly. Yeah. The article first mentioned how Josephine Baker claimed that Mallon attacked her and the other doctors with forks and then came at them fighting and swearing, like during her first quarantine. But then later, the press article started shifting the blame away from her being at fault, saying that she, you know, she was initially unaware that she was carrying any sort of germ. She, I mean, there's a lot of documentation that she was made aware, mm-hmm. whether or not she claimed she was, and she just refused to accept any of that. So,
I mean, we know she was told to stop being away from food and exactly. wash her hands, and she didn't.
Exactly.
That much we know, you know, like.
Yep. The newspapers also claimed that Mallon was prohibited from using the telephone to contact anybody except for doctors that were treating her and her guard. So stories that were once like celebrating the public health department and the legal system started becoming more sympathetic to Mary, and public health officials, you know, kept on the opposite, and that, you know, she was treated to the best of our ability, but she also refused to comply, which like there's probably some truth on both sides. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So Mallon spends the rest of her life in quarantine, the rest of her life at Riverside Hospital on North Brother Island.
Wow.
She was quite active until 1932 when she suffered a stroke. And after that, she was pretty much like wheelchair confined. She lost almost all bodily function on one side of her body. It was pretty catastrophic. She never completely recovered. And on November 11th, 1938, she died of pneumonia at age 69.
Wow.
So some sources claim that an autopsy found evidence of live typhoid bacteria inside of her gallbladder on her gallstones.
So when they, what they first wanted to check.
Yes. However, there were other publications that claim that is not true. There was never an autopsy because it was felt to be too dangerous and, you know, wouldn't add any right. value or whatever. So whether or not an autopsy happened is actually like, we're not sure, weirdly enough. So. Uh-huh. The official.
I feel like that should be something that's easy.
Like, I feel
either
like
you
it should
did
be.
It or you didn't. Like,
I
who
feel
did
like it should
and,
be. Like, because I know? Feel like autopsies happen in like an official capacity. It's like, is there a record or
unless
is there not?
It really didn't happen and someone was paid to say they did it.
So that's you know? Why like, I'm like, I bet you it just didn't happen.
Right.
You know what I mean? Otherwise, like, there would be an official record, right. I feel like. Right. So I think that some news publication was like, they did an autopsy and they confirmed it, like,
right,
just
right,
for
right, yeah.
papers or
yeah.
whatever. Mallon's case became the first in which an asymptomatic carrier was discovered and forcibly isolated.
Ugh.
There are a lot of ethical and legal issues raised by her case, which are still discussed today. And a
Could
lot
you
of which.
Imagine if that was happening to people in 2020.
Jesus fucking Christ.
Like,
yeah,
we're going to put you against your will.
Yeah, we're going like, to. Oh, you're and... not going to quarantine yourself? Great. We're going to arrest you. And we're going to put you in a hospital room and we are going to force you to give
like
us your
give
body
us
fluids
samples.
For years, Ugh. For literal years. Isn't that crazy? Research
it
has
stinks that she was never able to extract because at least like with other symptoms, like you have it mostly for a certain period of time. To
exactly.
Body, you know, but not like forever.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, obviously, there's some that you have forever, but.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, research has resulted in an estimate that Mallon has contaminated at least 122 people, and five of those people died.
Ooh.
Other sources attribute at least three deaths to contact with Mallon, but because of health officials' inability to persuade her to cooperate, the exact number is not known.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, some have actually estimated that the amount of fatalities are quite a bit higher, and it could be as many as 50 fatalities because of her non-compliance and of her disease.
I mean, you have to be responsible when you know that you have something.
Exactly. And like, she just made the decision not to believe it. I
right.
think what happened to her was very sad. That sucks.
Oh, yeah.
And there were better
yeah.
ways to handle that.
I completely agree.
But she was a very questionable woman and made a lot of very questionable disease
right.
choices in general. And
but when you think about like, and for the pandemic that we just went through, like
mm-hmm.
if people knew at that time, but I mean, mm-hmm. for it took a while to have tests and all that.
Yes.
When people were first dying in masses,
mm-hmm.
like you couldn't get a test.
No.
Maybe you could if you were a healthcare worker.
Yeah, but no. But
it was also very slim.
It was almost impossible.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, so we know that there was people walking around that were asymptomatic. They didn't know it. But I mean, given how heightened things were, like if I could see them doing something like that, like a forced quarantine on someone during that time from say like that March to April, May.
Sure.
Those first few months, it was just so.
It was so nightmarish and just nobody. It was the unknown that was so scary.
Right. And so if you had somebody that was walking around and it's proven that they have it, that we can trace it, and you're just utterly denying, like, I see that we could have gotten there.
Yes.
I mean, as shitty as it is.
Exactly.
Like, we were living in unparalleled times, so you would think it wouldn't happen. I could see it.
With someone who is that disagreeable and just refuses to
I hope she was made more informed that, you know, like what people were now, you know, like,
so hope that
I really hope
she
that
was told what was going on. She was told the theories of what they think was happening with her. She was told about asymptomatic carrying. I hope that she was told all that by the healthcare workers that were just trying to keep the public health's interest, best interest in mind.
Right.
I hope that that's the case and that she is just that disagreeable.
We can't even prove if they had an autopsy. So
no, we can't. So we don't know.
Yeah.
But that is like the sad, weird
Typhoid Mary.
Case of Typhoid Mary.
Wow.
Okay. Okay.
Wow.
You're welcome.
Thank you. I always love your old timey ones.
They're my favorites.
They are.
They just make me feel warm and fuzzy. I don't know what it is.
It makes me feel cold and sharp, not warm and fuzzy.
Cold and sharp. Well, I hope you all have a really cold and sharp Memorial Day.
Thank you for listening, everyone. You can find us on you can find us on Facebook at Med Crimes Podcast.
You sure can. You can also find us on YouTube by searching Med Crimes Podcast.
You can find us on Instagram at Med Crimes Podcast.
If you want to join our Patreons and get your very own
Patreons.
First of all, you get a free t-shirt if you're a member for long enough.
Nice.
Second of all, you get a shout out and I will assign you a sweet mythical creature all your own. And third of all, it's an awesome community. I mean, just come check us out.
I know.
You can find us at www.patreon.com/medcrimespodcast.
You can also send us your crazy stories, ideas, any suggestions, or anything you want to say to us. Be part of our next episode of Break Room Banter that will come up at the end of the season at medcrimes@gmail.com.
Wash your motherfucking hands.
How many times do we say this?
A lot.
It's like the Med Crimes slogan.
Science.
Stay safe out there.
Okay, bye.
And wash your hands.
And wash your hands.